Hi, this is Danielle from The Jealous Curator, and this is episode 68 of Art for Your Ear. This episode is supported by Saatchi Art, the world's largest curated online gallery offering original art by independent artists from around the world. You can visit them at saatchiart.com. Also, the folks at audible.com have given me a link to give to you so that you can pick up a free book along with a 30-day trial. Pop over to audibletrial.com/jealouscurator to pick up whichever book you like. My new book, Your Inner Critic is a Big Jerk, happens to be ready for pre-order right this very minute. Hint, hint. So, today we are calling Berlin, and I am going to do my very best to actually ask questions instead of just fangirling and gushing all over today's guest. Artist and illustrator Tina Berning is on the podcast. I have loved her washi women paintings for years. Years. I'm a little bit nervous to actually talk to her, but I think my overwhelming excitement will make me push that call button. Okay, let's do this. Let the fangirling begin. Hello.
Hi, Danielle.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, very fine. Of course, I fell asleep with my daughter.
Oh.
But luckily, my husband woke up.
Oh, that's good. I do that all the time, too.
It's so funny. You have a six-year-old, too.
Oh, mine's 10 now.
It's 10?
Ah, yes.
Okay. So you said it was his first week of school. Okay.
Oh, yeah, yeah. First week back to school, not the first.
Yeah, yeah. So my daughter had the first week of primary school.
How did it go?
It was great. It was very sweet and very happy, and it's great. So she's in an international school, and she speaks English there, which is great, and she loves it.
Oh, good. How are you with her going?
Oh, fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, she is. Yeah, she looks so old now.
I know.
It's amazing. No, but you see that they get more. They get more liberate and more. Self-conscious, and it's
yes,
great.
Yes, I know. And you just see them. I dropped my son off this morning, and you know, he's in the fifth grade now. He's 10, and I drop him off, and then I always just watch to make sure that he gets in okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And you just watch him, and he's just like got his own little life and his own little, you know, set of friends. And he runs over, and you can see them chatting. He's got his arm around one of his pals, and it's just like, oh man, like I wish I could just be a fly on the wall and hear it all, you know. But then I'd be that really creepy mom in the playground. So
yeah,
I just drive away. It's better that way.
Yeah.
So I am so excited to talk to you because I am a giant fan. And I was like, I wonder if I'm even going to ask her questions. I might just gush about her work for the next 40 minutes or something.
Let's see what happens.
I'll forget to ask you anything. I'll be like, and there's that other one that I love, and then there's this one, and there's that book, and then that show. So I'm going to control myself and try and ask you questions.
Okay, I'm very happy you asked me. I think this is such a great thing. Thank you so much.
Oh, no. I mean, I have, well, you know, I've written about you so many times, and but I don't know very much about you. You know, your story. And so I thought, well, this is so perfect. And I saw that you have a show that's opening in Toronto right now, right?
Exactly. Unfortunately, I can't make it because of my daughter just started school and I didn't want to leave her alone.
Yeah.
On that very first week of school that only happens once a lifetime.
Yes.
So I'm not going. But probably if everything works out nicely, I'm going in October, and we're having a special event then. So.
Oh, nice. Have you been to Toronto before?
No, of course not. I haven't even been to Canada at all. So.
Oh, well, I'm Canadian. I lived in Toronto for 10 years.
Okay. So, and where do you live now?
I live just outside of Vancouver.
Okay.
So on the other coast. But when you go to Toronto, I'll email you a list of all my favorite places to eat and stuff.
Yes, please.
That's what I do when I go back now, is I just eat. I just go from favorite restaurant to favorite restaurant.
Okay, very good.
Yeah, there we go. Okay, so I'm going to put all the info about that show in this post so that people can go check it out. Okay, so I need to know all your stuff. I need to know what you were like as a kid and if you've been drawing and painting beautiful women since then, or how you started, and what were you like as a kid?
Yeah, well, actually, I'm one of those kids who always wanted to be an artist and who always wanted to do what I'm doing now, actually. So I don't know if it was my own decision or if maybe I was just pushed into the direction of, oh, she can draw, she's going to be an artist, because I was always the messy one in the family, so she's an artist. And I always wanted to do this. And when I was about 10, my father's newspaper supplement started to begin, which was the Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung supplement. And you can compare it to the New York Times magazine. It was a beautiful supplement, and that was the only magazine in our family we had. So it was a very nice one. And I have two older sisters, and they got the magazine first. So they cut out all the photographs. Oh. And what was left over was the beautiful illustrations. And it was full of really, I still have a huge pile of those old magazines from the 80s. It was full of illustrations by Heinz Edelmann or Brad Holland, Paola Paglia, and all those really great people. Mm-hmm. And I loved them, and I cut them out and put them on my walls. And I didn't know that they were called illustrations, but I knew this is what I wanted to do.
Wow.
So I studied illustration, or I studied graphic design. Actually, in Germany, most universities offer graphic design, and illustration is part of it. So I was studying illustration, graphic design, focusing on illustration, and did that in Nuremberg, which is not a very spectacular place, but it was good. and then I as a job, as a student, I worked in a record company doing graphic design, and then it was the time when the computer started to be there. So when I started studying, it was still kind of new, and when I finished, the students were actually better than the teachers, because they didn't know anything about the computers. So they would just let the students do whatever they wanted and say, I think it's run like this now, so we give him a good grade. And so it was a very strange time. And instead of waiting what's happening, I was working in a record company, in a punk rock distribution company, actually, where I could just do whatever I wanted, actually, and learned a lot about production, about files, about all the things you would need on the computer. And then after I finished studies, I worked in a magazine for a year, which was also the supplement of a newspaper. So I came back to that.
Oh,
where
that's crazy.
And it was the... called Jetzt Magazine, the supplement of the Süddeutsche Zeitung, and at that time a very fancy, it was for the younger readers, a very fancy magazine. And I hated the job because I'm not such a good person to work in a huge company or huge team. I'm just too, I always tend to think about it too much. Why did this guy say this to that person?
Oh.
And so on. But it was, of course, wonderful to work on the other side, to be in the magazine, to look at portfolios of photographers and illustrators, and to know about the way a magazine is done.
Yeah.
From scratch. And that was 13 months in Munich. And after 30 months, I said, okay, that's enough pushing around pictures of other people. I want to make my own pictures. So.
Yeah.
Pushing around pictures of other people, exactly. I started to do my own, and that was a perfect time because it was in 1999 or 2000, where everybody was focusing on the computer and on new media and on computer-generated content, and I was doing my drawings. I also did a lot of freehand drawings that time, so vector drawings, but still I was drawing, and most of my student colleagues were doing the new animation things and everything that came out there. So there was not so many people there drawing, not like now, it's much more. And then also you have to always keep in mind that the German market is different, and especially at that time, there was not so many illustration used. At that, in the 90s and 2000 years.
Mm-hmm. Was it all photography mainly, or?
It was mainly photography, and yeah. There's a very different attitude than in America, where illustration is a proper category.
Yeah.
It's better now, but it used to be like the worst solution.
Oh, so if they couldn't afford photography, you'd get an illustration. Yeah,
if they couldn't find a photo, then we have to do it with an illustration. That changed, because I'm talking of the year 2000 or something.
But yeah.
It was definitely like this. So very technical, believing in technical things, situation rather than a hand-drawn something. An emotional hand-drawn thing was not so great as a technical
computer-generated thing. Yeah, yeah.
So I started and I happened to end up with advertisement. So usually you would first do all those magazines and then do advertising, because that's the bigger money thing. I did it the other way around.
Mm.
So I did a lot of, I just ended up there. I was asked by a huge agency to do a pitch for Smart, for the car. In 2000, I think that was. And I to do like layout drawings for the pitch. And I had no idea how layout drawings looked. So I did them. Yeah, absolutely not. So I did them the way I thought that was good, which was with vectors and, yeah, my kind of way that time. The usual illustration at that time would be with the markers, you know,
like very. Oh, yes.
And so they presented it, and it was obviously the very good. So the head of the company said that was the best presentation he had seen by then. And immediately I was booked by all other car companies or other agencies for the pitches for all other car companies. So I was in this car trap.
Yeah.
Which is a little strange to think about now, but it was really funny. And I had my two friends who I studied with, and I got them draw all the cars, and I draw all the sceneries and the figures, and we put everything together. And it was a funny time. Four Christmas in a row where I did at least three Christmas cards for three different car companies And I don't know why it was like this, but it was like something I was good in doing, an emotional thing in combination with a technical precise.
Yeah.
And this was somehow a combination that worked nicely. And I did that for quite a time. But started to do all the magazine jobs, which were from the beginning always different things, not only fashion illustration. This is always when people ask me, how do I become a fashion illustrator? I always say, never become just a fashion illustrator, because you limit yourself to just one thing. I love to do a variety, totally different stories. So I did the cars things, but then also fashion things, and then difficult texts for newspapers about, I don't know, about suicide or whatever. It can be everything. And I think it's always interesting when everything comes together and you have to find different languages for each story.
Yeah.
So
while maintaining your look.
Yeah, while maintaining my look.
Yeah.
But still, I was never, even in my studies, and my teacher was crazy with me, but I never was somebody who insisted in having this one style.
Right.
I would rather use different, let's say, techniques to to get different results for different stories because they need to be treated differently.
Right, right.
So my teacher at university got crazy because I would really like tell one story with a funny little drawings and the next story I would start to paint realistically, but still for me it would make sense because it's about the content. And so I have, you will still see in my work different kind of approaches. So sometimes it's more realistic, sometimes it's much more abstract, and it both works. I'm not so much, I don't think so much that it's about the outer style, it's rather about the inner style. Mm-hmm. So it can have different disguises, but it has to be, the style has to be something that's within the whole thing.
Yeah. It's but not, you can definitely see your hand in everything though. I don't know if it's your washiness or like I can always recognize that it's you, you know, and but you're right. Like they're all very different depending on what you're trying to do, but there's just something in it that's recognizable.
Yeah. Hopefully it is, of course.
Yeah. But you know, that's funny what you said about your teacher, because that's a very graphic designy thing, right? Like
totally.
You have to be able to, because I was a designer in an ad agency for years and years, and you have to be able to have your style, but take it out a little bit, because you can't do something for Nike that looks the same as a wine company that looks the same. You know, like you have to be able to be a bit of a chameleon.
Yes. Yeah. Totally. But, and then, also, the market pushes you to have one recognizable style because that's then easier to handle for agencies, for example. They know you deliver this one thing and that's it. And if they want something else, they ask somebody else. But I love to have a variety still, which is, for me, very important. And this leads us to the next step in my career, because I was doing illustrations for 5 years successfully. I think I had a really fast start on when I moved to Berlin and decided to only do illustrations. It was really a very good, it was very smooth. Mm-hmm. And but after a while, I had the feeling I need to put something new in it. So when you're an illustrator, you are in the strange situation that you live in a critic-free area, kind of, because people call you when they want something from you because they like your work.
Right.
And your friends and family likes your work too. And you're not somewhere where you have to you're judged properly because you don't get the feedback. If somebody looks at a magazine and says, oh, I don't like this illustration, he won't tell you. Never got a reader's letter saying, I didn't like that illustration at all. So what happens is that you do your illustrations, you develop something, people see it, they want it too for their own project. So they ask you to do something similar for their client or for their magazine, and that causes that you repeat yourself, repeat.
Yeah, you're back to all those cars.
Yeah, yes, exactly. You start with the cars and you start with a car, and I did this one for Smart. I did, after doing layout drawings, I did a proper campaign, and it was in winter, and it was with snowflakes, and everybody, this is where people thought, snowflakes and cars, great, we make a Christmas card. This is how people work. So this is why I had to do all those Christmas cards. So so I started something in 2004 with illustrator friends. I started a project called Bilder Club, so Picture Club, which is actually, and it took me quite a time to find out, it's actually exactly what I'm doing, or what's Instagram now, because it was in 2004 and we started to on an HTML page, so HTML page, so it was before Web 2.0. We together we posted drawings in square format.
Oh boy!
On an internet site, we created to to show each other that we do something beside our job. So to keep our creativity going, to appreciate the small ideas that didn't make it to a magazine or whatever. So every day we would post a drawing, having this kind of friendly social control amongst those seven friends. So when somebody wouldn't post anything for 3 days, you would call him and say, "What's up, boy?" And this was absolutely wonderful for my career, because I started collecting things and I started working on a daily basis, which means I finish something besides all the jobs I'm doing. I finish a little piece of art or piece of something before I leave the studio. That is a different process to just doing 10 drawings and put them on the side. Mm-hmm. So if you sit there and finish it and publish it by posting it on a website and now posting it on Instagram, makes it a different thing. So suddenly you have an audience who looks at it. That makes it a piece of art, a piece of something that is finished. And that is a very different different process. And this, to just keep on doing something and I finish that tomorrow or maybe in 3 weeks. So I forced myself since 2004 to do a picture a day, that is besides my jobs, that is besides all the things I have to do. And that is the source for all my creativity. Oh. And that triggers anything. And I started posting those drawings on my website in my diary section. And
That's what I found.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And 3 months later, the first people asked me to do something like that. So that was the things I did to get a little away from the jobs, and suddenly people asked me to do something like that for a job.
Yeah.
So I understood, okay, I am the one who has to feed the whole system. I am the one who has to give the information what people can get, of course. And it's since then, it's like I post something new, and 3 months later, and it's always 3 months later, somebody calls and says, "I want to have something like this." It's not straight away. It's always a little later. like an example, maybe 2 years ago, I posted some drawings of my daughter because they were just so pretty, being 3 or 4 years old. It's the nicest time for drawings for children. Yeah. And I put some on my website, and 3 months later, a newspaper called me and said, "Oh, we have to do something about school. Can't you make a spread with your together with your daughter?" So this is exactly what I found out. It's I have to put something into the whole system, and it'll come back. And
that gives me chills. I love that.
Yeah, it's so important, and the whole question of how do I keep being creative for many years. I'm doing it for 15 years. I'm working as an illustrator, and you have to nourish the whole system. You have mm-hmm. to always, you have to invest. You have to of course work and draw, but you also have to invest time, sometimes even money. But you always have to nourish the whole system, that it's not, because otherwise you're just doing what you have been doing and somebody wants exactly the same thing, and you're repeating yourself.
Mm-hmm. So, and you just burn out and then you hate it. And
you get bored.
Yeah.
Totally bored. That's the worst thing.
When I first graduated, I heard someone speak and I thought this was so smart, and it's exactly what you're saying. Yeah. Because I was a web designer when I first started, and he said, you know, if you're always doing bank websites or car illustrations, for example, he said, if you're always doing bank websites, but you don't want to, but you know, you're good at it, the next people that call you is going to be another bank and another bank and another bank. And they said, you know, if you want to be doing like music sites, you know, for like little independent bands. You need to be doing those at night so that a band finds you, and then you start doing those and those and those so that you don't get trapped in banks or cars or whatever. And that's exactly what you're saying. And I remember that. I was probably 22, and I just remember that so clearly. And I love that you're saying the same thing.
No, it's really important. And then after we did this Builder Club thing, which was
you could have been a billionaire.
Yeah, oh, totally. We forgot we didn't think about those heart system. This was so we should have, because it was really 2004. It's amazing. I really think it's funny. No, but we after I think 1.5 years, we did an exhibition with 1,660 drawings we had been collecting, and we made prints of it, so like photo prints in very small, like CD size format, and put them on the wall of 4 huge rooms, which was really a funny exhibition, because 1,660 pictures to look at is very, it's like a wall newspaper or something, really. And you could make a survey on what, because you could also buy them. We sold them for 10 euros, so very cheap thing. And you could see what people would be interested in most, because if you have such an amount, you could really make a survey, or not a survey, I don't know how you call it, just like see what works best. And that was sex, animals, and football. In that order. So those were sold first.
And
and that keeps, keeps until now.
Sex sells, baby.
Yes, sex sells. It's animals and football. And it's exactly what's happening on Instagram. So
oh my God, that's crazy.
Yeah, it's really funny.
You could have had little heart stickers that people put up, and
we had those sold stickers, because we
and
it looked exactly like this, because they were also square, those pictures, so we had those little red sold stickers.
Funny.
Yeah,
and I love that you paid attention to what sold the most in what order.
And the other thing was that things that were hanging on eye level, those were the ones that were sold more too. And then on corners, because it was 4 rooms and you could go through, so things that would hang on corners would sell very well too. So it's very interesting how the perception changes if you move through a room, and what you look at when you are by your physical appearance, by your physical, you're there.
Yeah, people are too lazy to lift their heads up or down.
It's very funny. But it was a very funny exhibition. And the whole thing was, I think it's still there, the website, but I think we did it really consequently for 3 or 4 years. And it was a huge source of inspiration for me, because also talking of this process of finishing something daily, if you force yourself to finish something, you put yourself under pressure, and all creative people need pressure. I think there's nobody I know who's an artist who doesn't need a certain amount of pressure to finish things. So if I know I have to leave to pick my daughter, or I have to leave whenever, and I have to finish it now, and I go crazy because I don't like it yet. But then suddenly I find a solution that's better than anything I could have thought about if I had a lot of time and to try to construct it. Yeah. So by forcing myself to finish it, I do those compromises, or not compromises. I do really, sometimes I just, you just have those little moments.
It's almost like you just go with your gut. Like you don't have time to think too much.
Exactly. And then next day you look at it and you think, it's good. And sometimes when I post something on Instagram, I don't know if this is good. And then it's there. And then you look at it again and you think, it's okay. It's okay. because you're not every moment of your creative process, you're not on the top of being able to judge.
Yeah.
It's not that you're always, it's the same, like you're not always same good in drawing or in making the process. Sometimes you start drawing and, or I start drawing and I draw like 10th grade. And I immediately finish and do the dishes or do my paperwork and then try it later. But this on same, you're not always able to judge properly. Sometimes things take time, and that you see the quality, or you need a distance to it, mm-hmm. and then suddenly you see the quality. So I have this system of boxes, which are marked in not so good and not so bad. So I do my drawings, and I do a lot of them, and then sometimes I'm fast and there's one drawing that straight away works nicely and I post it and I finish it. First finish, then post it. And then the other ones end up in those boxes. So one is crap, one is not so good, one is not so bad. And then when I continue on this, on doing my drawings that are beside my work, I take drawings out of those boxes, look at them again, and they might be a week old, or maybe 2 months old, or maybe even half a year old. But suddenly I see something and in those drawings, and I find something I can continue with. And then I add something, or I cut out something, and or I collage something on it, and suddenly it makes sense. So some drawings are like wine. They need a little time to to develop. And that works nicely. So this is how I do my daily production of drawings.
God, I love it so much. It makes me feel like I'm going to cry. I love that so, so much. I already knew that I loved you. Now it's just like being cemented in those two boxes. I bet everyone listening to this right now is getting two boxes, putting them in their studios right now. And if they're not, they should be.
Yes, it's a good system. And it's also a positive system, I think. That's also important.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I kind of do that, but not, I'm doing it your way from now on. But I've got a little pile on my floor that I, you know, I refuse to throw. I just throw them down there. And then every now and then you'll come back and I just see like a top corner. And I'm like, oh, I really like that part of it, but don't like the rest. And then kind of work off of that. And you're right. There's a lot of gems down on the floor.
Yeah. Exactly. And you just have to look at them. So if you, I've really established a system for myself for this. So no gems get lost.
Yeah. And oh, I love it so much.
And, so it's, thank you.
Yeah. You're a creative genius. I love that so much. And I'm so organized. I'm such a nerd about like labeling things. And like, I really like organization. So I think that's the other thing that's making my heart race is like, ooh, it's so organized.
I sent you a picture.
Oh yes. Thank you. I'll put that in the post too. Okay. So I have a question. So you're doing that. So you're still illustrating, right?
Yes. I'm still illustrating.
But you have a fine art practice too. Like you're showing your art in galleries too.
Yes.
So is it half and half, or is it more illustration? Or
I think it's half and half. What came after the Bilder Club show, the exhibition, was that I was asked by a photographer friend of mine who did a magazine to do something for his website, which was not repeating the content of the magazine on the website, but something that would happen there. And I had this box, talking of boxes, I had this box where I wrote on 100 girls on cheap paper in a moment of...
Oh, that was next on my list.
Yeah. And then I had this box and there was maybe 5 sheets inside. And he asked me if I had a project, and I said, yes, I have this project, 100 girls on sheet paper, and I give you a drawing a day for 100 days for your website. So he had this website and you could only see one drawing after the other, and you could even only see the actual one. You could not see the past ones.
Oh, the
ones.
Before or after, yeah.
But
you only had 5 in your box?
I only had 5 in my box, okay. So I was brave and I had to do. This is talking of investing something,
yeah.
So I had to do it, and I didn't know where it would go. And So I started, and I even, while doing it, we went to Spain and spent some time in Spain. So I think it's like, it was, yeah, it's 3.5 months, 100 days, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it was quite a time, and it was really nice to do it, because same principle, if you finish one every day, if you sit there and you know you have 3.5 months and you have to finish 100 drawings in 3.5 months, it's impossible.
Yeah, and you're going to leave it all to the last 2 weeks.
You would have two at least terrible months where you push it in front of yourself. You just don't do it. And then you start and it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger in your head. But if you do it step by step, and you know every day I have to finish one, and I had to finish one because it was published on that website.
Right.
So, and that makes the small steps make the thing easier, and the small steps added together are big steps. So after I did 80 drawings, he called me and said, we have to make a book out of it. So we straight away made a book out of it. I think I was finished in August, and the book was done in September. And then we had a huge exhibition in Berlin showing 100 drawings framed, and 100 girls on cheap paper. And the book was presented, and it was a huge success. It was really fun. And when I started, I was just being very, very, ambitious, having 5 drawings. I can give you 100 drawings.
Yeah.
But when I ended, it was a huge, great, wonderful project. And it was well perceived, you say
yeah,
that?
No, received, well received.
Yeah, yeah, well received, and it was sold in a lot of countries, and then we did a second edition with Chronicle Books in the US, and then I showed it in New York and in Tokyo, which was wonderful.
The full exhibition?
A lot of them were sold. No, the exhibition. So a lot of the 100 girls were sold when I was asked to show it in Tokyo and New York. So I took 20 original from the book, from the original 100 girls.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did the New York girls and the Tokyo girls. So I did 80 more drawings.
Oh, my God.
So the exhibition was 100 girls on sheet paper, but it was 20 of the original from the book and 80 others.
Oh.
And those even included small drawings on post-its and larger ones, so any size, because the other ones were more or less the same size. So it was very funny, and it was nice. It was very.
Did everything sell?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those.
Oh my God! And where did you get all your cheap paper?
Oh, flea markets everywhere. And I must say, when I was a student, we would always go into those old fabrication halls that were abundant, and all those empty places. I would always go with those two friends who I had made the drawings of them drawing the cars.
Yeah,
these two friends and me, we always went to all those abandoned places and got tons of paper. And I still have those. These are going to be empty now, but I still have things which are, I don't know, 20, which I collected 20 years ago, so 15 years ago. But paper, I always collect paper. It's always, I always have it. I even have paper still from my mother, who like at least 25 years ago or something. So
yeah.
It's really, I just keep it. But then also on flea markets, you will always see me on flea markets bending over to those boxes on the ground where people have those old photographs and things, and trying to find empty pages. Because of course, I can also draw on written pages, but if I find an empty old book, it's the best.
Yeah, it's like a gold. It's like finding treasure.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Well, here's a question about that then. So do you have any... I mean, you're so accomplished now, and you've been practicing and doing this for so long, but do you ever have like a piece of paper that you find that you love, because maybe there's writing on it or there's the perfect lines that you love on it? Are you ever nervous to use it because you don't want to wreck it, or are you just so excited to get your marks on there?
Yeah, of course. It's of course I have some treasures with certain numbers on it or things I really like, and then I always think like, is it the right moment? And then I wait for a good moment. Talking of those, sometimes you are able to draw very well, and sometimes not. So if I have a day where I can draw very well, that would rather be a day where I would take this paper.
Not on the 10th grade day. Not on the 10th grade day.
Not on that day. No, I won't touch it. No, but I even have different piles of those papers, and in different qualities. So, and then I try to find more paper, and I try to find larger papers. So my husband had the idea to draw on inner record sleeves.
Oh yeah.
So we are both record collectors, and we have a huge collection. And my husband is in a how do you call this? A forum where you talk about.
Oh, a forum? Yes.
A forum where you talk about record players. And so friends of analog music.
Yeah.
And he posted, does anybody have spare record inner sleeves? And everybody answered, why? And then he posted a drawing of mine on the inner record sleeve, and they sent me piles of it because they are collectors, and they take them off and put proper ones that are softer.
Oh, that will protect it.
That will protect the vinyl.
Yeah.
And they put them on the site, but they can't throw them away because they are collectors.
Right.
And so happy to have a reason to send them to give them away. So I have piles of them, and I glue them together. So I have a beautiful grid. I glue them together, and I can make huge formats of paper that have a grid, because it's always this certain record sleeve size, and then put together I can make any size. And I love the idea that there was music wrapped inside for many years, maybe 20, maybe 30, 40 years.
Yeah.
And so this is what I love about found paper. It's the traces, of course, that's on it. And in this case, the idea that there was music inside. Plus then every paper reacts differently to the ink or whatever I go on with it. So I never know what's happening. And I love this process. I love this challenge. So
that's another treasure.
Yes.
Do you prefer, do you like painting really big? Or do you like the smaller, like where do you feel more comfortable?
I'm definitely, obviously more comfortable with the smaller formats because I just always do it.
Mm-hmm.
I like to sit down on my table and to draw it. But then once I start doing the big ones, I'm super happy and to have done it. So I have to encourage myself to do more big ones.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun. It's great.
I've been doing small collages and I keep wanting to go big, and then I've been chickening out, to be totally honest. And so this is feeling very inspiring.
Yeah, it is. It is a totally different thing. And I even see that when I do an A4 size, are you familiar with those size?
Yes.
So it's like a regular piece of paper size. And it's different to do an A3 size, which is double size. I actually have to stand up, because if I sit on the chair doing an A3 size, the perspective doesn't work in properly, and the faces get wider. It's strange. So I have to stand up. And of course, sometimes I'm just too lazy to stand up. folding the paper or cutting it into half. And then, but sometimes then you are also limited. But it's we all know it's a completely different thing to draw in a big size, and it's a much more physical thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, you have to move with your whole body. And of course, you have to keep the overview, which is much more difficult.
Mm-hmm.
If you are trained to work on the smaller formats.
When you stand up, are you standing up over it, or do you have it on an easel or something?
No, I stand up. I have it on the table.
Yeah. Yeah, I used to, in university, I always painted on huge canvases, like 6 foot by 6 foot canvases. And now I'm on little 6 inch by 6 inch paper. And I feel very safe there. And I feel like I need to challenge myself to get big again, you know?
Yeah, it totally is. As I'm definitely the same. If you give me a small, like even a post-it, I feel, for example, pencil drawing. I think I can do the nicest pencil drawings on post-its. It just feels properly.
Yeah, it sort of suits the medium in a way. Yeah, like, totally. Yeah.
And it's very different. But sizes are big things are great too. Yeah. I always see my drawings when they are sold, for example, I see them like a little treasure, a small treasure in a corner of a room or something. I imagine them like this, but I know people love to have huge things.
Yeah,
too. So
that's the thing.
It's. And but then once I start doing it, and what I did now, so the one thing is with those record sleeves, and the other thing is I started to take my abandoned drawing, like my from the crap box, so it didn't make it to the not so good and not so bad box. And I
there's actually a crap box too.
Yes, there's a crap box
too. Oh, okay.
And but crap, but not waste.
So right, not garbage can. Right. Yeah.
I can use those things to cut things out, to collage with it, and to whatever. So what I started is gluing those drawings together, as to make a big piece of paper. Ah. And suddenly you have drawings where there's a figure that I didn't like, but suddenly it's upside down and it works nicely, and I continue drawing. I have to draw something over it so it directs my drawing. It puts it to a direction. And then suddenly underneath, you see there's still a little face, and it's starting to get really exciting. So I have the traces of the material itself that I found somewhere that has traces because it's old. Plus, I left traces on it and in a different process. And then I combine those, and suddenly they make sense. And that's a very nice process I have just maybe this last year started to do, which is fun.
Oh, that makes me want to cry too. I love that so much. What a great way to,
there's nothing wasted, you know?
No, I love it so much. Do you have any of that work on your site right now?
Yes, there's a piece like this at Alison Mylan gallery show. Yeah. There's a piece like this, and there had been.
Is that New York?
That is Toronto.
Oh, Toronto. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, so, in that new show.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, okay.
So there are some of these, and I send you some examples.
Okay. Too. Oh, Tina.
And they are to see. So you had the question about the illustration and art.
Oh yeah, that was a while back.
just to finish. So I did the I did this One in a Girls on Cheap Paper book, and I did an exhibition. And at that time, I didn't expect myself to ever do an exhibition because I was an illustrator. But then I totally fell in love with working like this. So I decided I do both, and I do it kind of half and half. And I can only manage to do both because I do this daily process thing. So any exhibition I did since the One on the Girls on Cheap Paper exhibition, I did in this daily process.
Yeah.
So I knew I had an appointment in 3 months' time. And without panicking at all, I was just starting to do every day a piece. So that would make 30 pieces, 30 drawings a month. So I had 90 drawings, and then I could pick from these. That would be enough. And that always worked.
It's so smart.
So for me, it's the only possible way. And of course, there have been times where I was not able to do my diary thing, especially when I had my child, and I was always missing it. And I completely, most of the time since 2004, I'm doing it. But it's for me, it's the best way of of doing the process and of keeping both going, the illustration work, which is on demand. So I have a project for a certain amount of time. I have a content and I work on this. And besides this, I can easily continue doing my art by doing step by step every day.
What a great practice to get yourself into.
Yeah.
And then you don't ever get burned out. You don't ever feel like you're getting pulled one way or the other. It's such a good balance.
It totally works. For me, it totally works. I'm really unhappy when I only do jobs I love to do the commission jobs because I love to be confronted with the most different themes.
Well, and I'm sure that informs your actual art, and then your art informs the illustration jobs, and
exactly. And it works really nicely. And also, I'm not dependent on the art market. I feel like a happy, not guest, but I can do it. And I have exhibitions and I sell. But I'm not depending on the whole thing because the art market is, as we all know, very tricky.
Yeah. Well, and that takes the pressure off of you too.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Totally.
Oh, I am so glad we did this. I had no idea what this conversation was going to be, and like I have had goosebumps and been close to tears through most of it because it's just so, you have such a beautiful way about you, and it just makes me love your work even more, if that's even possible. See, I told you I was just going to gush and gush and gush. Okay, the last thing I want to do is the not so speedy speed round.
Okay.
It's supposed to be fast questions, but I always go off on tangents. So,
okay.
But we'll try, because now for me, it's nighttime for you. It's the middle of the day for me. I have to go pick up my son from school in 10 minutes.
Okay. So we wish.
This will be the pressure that we need. We've got to finish this speed round today. Okay. Your favorite paint color or ink color?
It's black. Black and red.
I was wondering if pink was going to get in there. Black. Okay. If you could travel anywhere in the world right now, where would you go?
Los Angeles.
Oh, I love LA.
Yeah.
Let's meet up there.
Okay.
Okay. Your favorite dessert?
It's milch rice. It's rice cooked with milk. I don't know how you call it.
Oh, like rice pudding kind of?
Yeah, rice pudding with cinnamon.
Ooh. Yum, that's so comfy and cozy. Yeah. Okay, so last question. Which artist, dead or alive, would you want to share that dessert with and sit and have a little chat somewhere? Who would you want to meet? Or do you just want the rice pudding all to yourself?
All to myself. No, not at all. So if it's up to my job, it would be probably Heinz Edelmann, the illustrator who I was loving so much when I was a child.
Yeah.
And I never met, although he was teaching in Stuttgart. And I, in the 90s, it wasn't that you would be able to approach things like this so easily. So somehow, like now, everybody's informed about everything and you know exactly where, blah, blah, blah.
Right, right.
In the 90s, I just never thought about going there, although I really loved this guy, this as a person, as an illustrator so much. So that was talking of the jobs, it would probably be him. And otherwise, I don't know. I mean, my biggest unfulfilled wish forever anyway is to do a time travel to the turn of the last century, just one day somewhere in a department store in New York in 1900 or so. That would be
amazing.
So, and there, a rice pudding.
Okay. You can have rice pudding in New York in 1900.
Yes.
I love it. Okay. Oh, that's it. That's all of my questions.
Good.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much.
And this is a perfect excuse to write about you yet again.
Yeah.
I got an email about the show and was so excited that you were in Canada, and I was wishing so much that I was in Toronto right now.
Yeah.
I thought, oh, perfect. I'm going to see if I can get her on the podcast. And so, thank you for saying yes and for sharing all of these brilliant insights. And yeah, I can't wait to put the post together.
Okay. Thank you so much, Danielle.
Okay. I will talk to you soon. We'll meet up in LA one day.
Very good. Very good.
Okay. I'll talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon. Bye. Thank you so much. Bye.
How amazing was that? I have loved Tina's work forever, and now after talking to her, I love all of it even more, if that's even possible. I really did almost cry a few times. I don't know why, just so many of the things she said struck a chord with me. Just listening to her voice and all of her creative yet methodical systems just made me want to make stuff. I am so putting 3 boxes in my studio later today. Crap, not so good, and not so bad. Love, 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 love. She sent me photos of those amazing boxes and I put them in the post over on my site, thejealouscurator.com. Oh, and also in that post, aside from all of Tina's amazing work that we talked about, is all of the info about her show that's currently hanging at the Allison Milne Gallery in Toronto. If you're in Toronto right now, go. Okay, and with that, I will say thank you so much to Tina for being so smart and lovely and generous with her stories and advice. Thank you to Saatchi Art for supporting this episode. Thanks to Audible for offering up a free book via audibletrial.com/jealouscurator. And as always, thank you for listening. There will be more art for your ear next weekend. See you then.